Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Okay, Galen, line number two. You are now on with Mr. Neil E. Fuller, Jr. What is your question?
Greetings. My question is, Mr. Fuller, in his writing and many of his talks, he consistently says and writes that racism is white supremacy is racism, connecting those two concepts. However, many, many of the black people that I've heard who have read his material or who have listened to him through the years, they will still add that conjunction and say racism and white supremacy as though these are two separate concepts. And I want to know if Mr. Fuller could explain or just give his thoughts on why so many victims of racism seem to have a difficult time equating those two concepts and understanding why you emphasize that racism is white supremacy.
Okay, good question, Mr. Fuller.
Yes, that's true. Habit. In fact, I have had people interview me at great length repeatedly, and the person who was interviewing me would all, even though I am saying racism is white supremacy is racism. They are one and the same. You don't separate those two terms. Never, ever separate those two terms. Racism, the only form of racism is white supremacy. And the only form of white supremacy is racism. They are one and the same. It's not white supremacy and racism or white supremacy or racism. Never. But I've had interviewers, I mean, there are records of many interviewers using the term white supremacy and racism. Racism and white supremacy. Even in the same interview where I'm saying don't ever separate the two.
They still separate.
And they're out of habit.
Yes.
Because that's you know, our minds are kind of, you know, in a trance. Mm-hmm. When it comes to understanding what racism really is. See, all it is just understanding that racism is white supremacy is racism.
Yes.
And what is it? What is racism? What is racism good for? Practicing, I mean, what is the being a member of a race good for? Practicing racism. Black people have been told we are members of a race. We're not members of any race. When did we join? We don't join races. You know, you say, well, I was born into a race. Yeah, because somebody told you that. And who was the somebody that told you that? The white supremacists. They did all the telling.
Because they wanted to.
They invented this thing called race. Race doesn't serve any purpose at all except to mistreat people based on color. That's what it is.
All righty. And if I may add, thank you for your call.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, December 20th, 2015. So I have been told. The audio segment at the beginning of the program that was from Talktainment, Mr. Fuller's weekly program, The Compensatory Concept. He is on, I think it's every Wednesday, generally every Wednesday morning, depending on where you happen to be at, but Wednesday mornings. Great information dialed in. I think that was confused because it's Sunday now. It'll be 2 weeks ago this coming Wednesday when that program aired a little bit earlier this month. But I thought that was really important. That is a fundamental concept, and you will hear that all the time, even on this program. People saying racism and white supremacy, that is hugely important, that those two terms are equivalent. It is the same thing. There's only one form of racism, and that is white supremacy. White people do a lot of subtle damage with words, suggesting that there are other types of racism, that black people practice racism, that other non-white people practice racism. They do a really good job generating confusion just with that alone, suggesting that there is something other. There's another type of racism. Not true. White supremacy is racism. Racism is white supremacy. This is our global Sunday talk on racism. Definitely want to invite folks that are listening in to chime in, participate. Very much excited to hear from some of our international listeners and just people who, victims of racism, who listen to the program and might not be able to participate during our normal broadcast time. The number to dial, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Looking forward to hearing from folks today, and Chantel as well. Chantel, if you're on the line, go ahead, press star 6 so I can see your line, get you in with us as well. She might have some workplace racism. I think even we might have international workplace racism with us today. Real quick, before I nab some of the folks that are already with us, when we ended the last program in November, I read the section from Dr. Kamau Kamban's book where he talked about the color coding, the concept of red, white, and blue, and what that means in the system of white supremacy and how white people coordinate around those colors. We were talking about that right after the Paris attacks. The New York Times, they have an article. It's U.S. support of gay rights in Africa may have done more harm than good. I'm not going to read the whole report because it's pretty thick, but it is interesting. I would encourage folks to check it out. But this section just stood out. It said, at the Office of the Initiative for Equal Rights, here, a small community center has served as an oasis for gay Nigerians in this megalopolis, but they were unsettled by the red, white, and blue stickers once posted through the hall. The stickers, with the message, U.S. aid from the American people, underscored the Nigerian gay rights movement's financial dependence on the West, white people. For some, they also inadvertently gave credence to the widely held belief in Africa that homosexuality is a foreign lifestyle foisted on the continent. I will stop there. They even include in the article how white people in the U.S. have, since 2012, have invested, I think the figure that they listed was $700 million since 2012, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, just on gay rights. Nothing else, not clean water or any other problems that folks are dealing with throughout the world, particularly black people, but just promoting gay rights. Red, white, and blue. With that, I think we have at least two folks with us on the line outside the States. They were both with us last time. I'll nab callers as well. Mr. Fox and Andrew, I think both should be with us. Are both of you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Afternoon, Gus. How are you?
I'm doing well. Morning here, but glad to have you on the program. Looking forward to hearing from you again, sir. And Mr. Fox, are you with us as well?
Good morning, Gus. I'm here. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you, Crystal. Outstanding. Glad to have both of you with us this morning. I hope folks, number one, I hope folks heard the program that we did last month. I learned quite a bit myself, and I heard got lots of great feedback from listeners. They really appreciated hearing everyone's perspective on what happened in France, and hopefully we can get kind of an update now that it's been about a month since everything happened. Anything that you all want to touch on that you think is important just to before we get started, and then certainly we can get to Paris and some of the other things that are going on also?
No, I've got nothing I need to touch on.
Okay. Mr. Fox?
Nothing comes to mind as yet.
Right on. I'm sure folks listening in will have questions, and I kind of have some topics I definitely want to get your thoughts on and share a thought or two of my own as well. I guess we'll pick up because that's where we left off the last time both of you were with us. Well, not Mr. Fox. He has been listening in. With the Paris attacks, it's been a month since all of that went down. What have you all observed being in Europe? What have you seen? What have you noted in about the 30 days since all of that happened when we last spoke with you?
Well, do you mind if I go first, Mr. Fox?
That's fine, Andrew.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I've noticed really is a lot of what we predicted the last time. So, you know, just the whole sort of ramping up of really just prejudicial behavior towards all non-whites. I mean, that's what I see. But also, I mean, as a teacher, this whole sort of ramp up of what Mr. Gove, you may not know him, but Mr. Gove is the ex-education secretary in this country. Well, he's gone now because teachers didn't like him. But this man brought in something called British values, right? So there's been a ramp up of British values, whatever that is, in schools. So it's just this whole thing, apparently, that somehow British values are different in some, well, they are really, I'll come to that in a minute, but this whole ramp up of British, so-called British values, in other words, that they consider it to be fair play, equal opportunities and all the rest of it. It's been a ramp up of all of that sort of stuff. Mr. Fox might have more knowledge on this one. I read in the paper that the chap who killed the British officer had his teeth knocked out in prison. I mean, basically, there's been this whole sort of wordology in the press against Muslim people, but it's been veiled. It's been veiled with this thing apparently about groups like ISIS and Al Qaeda are not Muslims, right? But yet, how Muslims are being treated in society says something totally different, right? So, and by the way, I'm not a Muslim, you know, and I don't personally subscribe or really even understand the Muslim faith. But what I do understand is that most Muslims are non-white people. So there's been this whole sort of ramp up of a rhetoric that says, ISIS are not Muslims, but yet how they're treated, how Muslims are treated out and about in the streets, it says something totally different. So that's what I've witnessed.
In line with what we talked about last time, Mr. Fox, any observations?
The only observations I've been actually noticing is basically through the news. So you actually are seeing as you see in America, where you'll see the church, the black churches, coming out and saying certain things. You're seeing a lot of the religious Muslim community imams coming out and denouncing terrorism and denouncing ISIS. So you're seeing more of that in the news now. But it's just the standard procedure. What you actually do see from earlier is anti-Muslim rhetoric and behavior towards Asian people in this country, because a lot of Muslims in this country are Asian. So before the anti-Islam phase came about, Asians in this country were attacked in the 60s and 70s, and that came under the phrase of so-called Paki bashing. So you had the stage of the Paki bashing, and then after that stage, you had the anti-Islam. So you're just seeing this really just turned up a notch.
Wow. No surprise. I think a lot of folks thought that was going to happen. That has been happening in this part of the world as well. The attacks, I think this entire year, that's been one of the things that stood out to me. They've been burning and attacking black churches. Certainly the Charleston terrorist attack with Dylann Roof incident to itself. But then the other attacks that happened on black churches in the immediate days and hours even of that attack. And then a lot of other attacks on black churches in the St. Louis, Missouri area, even recently within the past couple months. And then since, I guess, the 30 days since the Paris attack here in the States, attacks at different mosques and what have you, where white people have just used this as justification, I think, as we thought, used this as justification to go out and attack non-white people, be it, you know, the excuse that I thought they were Muslims or they were just non-white people in general, that we feel justified to go out and be violent for white supremacy in practice. I know Dr. Welsing at her institute on the 10th, I almost made a sound clip of it because she talked about it. But The Guardian, a UK publication, they had at least three different reports that the title of the reports was ISIS Papers. And it contained information allegedly how the group ISIS, where some of the instructions or some of their key concepts and directives were titled ISIS Papers, about what they were planning to do. And Dr. Welsing saw this and was just like, man, this is totally a campaign to smear my work as well, so that people say, oh my God, you're listening to this Welsing woman. She's a terrorist. She's in with, you know, these folks that are attacking our values and doing this, you know, savage stuff in Paris and around the world. Did you all see any of the reports that were in The Guardian where the title of the articles were ISIS Papers and then they went on to link to this alleged terrorist activity?
I didn't see it. I would love to. I'm very interested to see it. I did not see it at all. No. Okay. I did not see it. I mean, I must admit, I do not read The Guardian at all. Or very rarely do I delve into it, because it's, you know, to be honest, there's nothing in there. I don't consider it to be very much in there for me. But I mean, I'd love to read. When did you say the article came out?
Well, there were several of them. That was the thing. I was talking to Dr. Welsing this week. And she said that one of the participants at the Welsing Institute made her aware of it. And so I was reading it. And then I looked and I was like, oh, wow, it's more than one. So one of them, this is from December 7th. Wow. And it's titled The ISIS Papers: Leaked Documents Show How ISIS Is Building Its State. So this is December 7th. And it, you know, goes into a lot of detail, but there are, like I said, there are multiple documents with this title. There's several on the Guardian site, and then there are a few others on some other, some sites just picked it up, you know, because they had it. But there are quite a few others that, you know, are, it's the same thing, ISIS Papers, and then it goes on to talk about, you know, this terrorist, alleged terrorist organization.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting.
Let's see there. One of the other titles, the ISIS Papers: Behind Death Cult Image Lies a Methodical Bureaucracy. This was also came out on December 7th by the same author at The Guardian. And there's another one. Like I said, there's at least three on The Guardian alone.
Wow.
I don't know if to either of you, Mr. Fox or Andrew, does that theory, what Dr. Welsing is saying, that she, in her mind, I think she had been saying this, just for the record, she had been saying this for months. I think she even said it on the cows back this summer, that she thought just the fact that they're labeling this group ISIS, that is going to be used to undermine the credibility of her work, and so that any black person that is talking about the ISIS papers, we're just going to lump you in with some sort of crazy terrorist cult. And she said that, you know, she felt that a lot of people would be skeptical and be like, oh man, I thought Dr. Welsing was crazy before. She is really crazy now. But Go ahead.
It doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that that this would be happening, because people, to be honest, a lot of people don't read for themselves. You know, a lot of people don't read for themselves, and so can you hear me all right?
You broke up initially, but you're crystal clear now.
Okay. You know, a lot of people don't read for themselves. So and allow, you know, national press and media to do their reading for them. You know, so no, it doesn't surprise me one little bit, to be quite honest with you.
Doesn't surprise me either. Does not surprise me either, especially if white people hear this as well. If white people hear ISIS papers and they see work by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, they're going to put that and the terrorist organization together.
Absolutely. I'm linking the articles on Facebook, and I'll just email it to you, Andrew, so you can check it out. But there are several of them. I would even encourage folks, if you do like a search online, just to see how frequently it pops up, or maybe even just to put ISIS papers in alone and see how many of the hits go to Dr. Welsing and how many go to this organization that they're talking about some sort of terrorist activity, to see how that changes over the next, you know, few months or years, depending on how long all of this goes. You can rest assured when she comes back on the program, we will spend more time talking about this issue. If listeners, if you all have questions about, you know, any of the other observations around the Paris incident or what we're talking about with ISIS, Dr. Welsing, feel free to chime in if you have questions. This is not our full 3-hour program, just doing roughly an hour, no more than about an hour and a half for this Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon, depending on where folks happen to be at. And workplace racism as well, always welcome. Appreciate folks who have things that they want to share dealing with that as well. I know Andrew had said before the program that you actually had an incident with workplace racism with some black coworkers that you wanted to share also.
Yeah, definitely. When I touch on a little bit of it, it will make you cry, to be quite honest with you. You know, it's just amazing. It's amazing what some white people think they can get away with. But I think they've had a nasty shock this time around, though.
Wow. Details. We're waiting. Details. Details.
Can I go into it now, Gus?
Absolutely.
I've left the school now. I've got two colleagues that are still there, two black male teachers. One is a head of faculty and the other who's a electronics teacher, not a head of a department, just a electronics teacher. That particular school is a performing arts school, but it's mainly full of white students and, you know, mainly sort of white members of staff as well. Now, when I got there last October, I slowly discovered I slowly discovered that that there was no or very little, if any, coursework from the previous academic year, you know, across the board. I mean, I'm talking year 10, 11, 12 and 13, very little. Bearing in mind the students had been there for 1 year, right? There was very little coursework evidence, right? So obviously you got to ask the question, what was being done? What was being done in that school last year, you know? And so I asked the senior teacher who was at the time my line manager, you know, what were you lot playing? In a nice way, in a professional way, I basically said, you know, what were you lot playing at last year? And I got no answer. But not only was there no coursework, meaning that the students had done no work, right, at all, or no work relevant to any kind of syllabus, right? There was no, in teaching, you write things called schemes of work, units of work that, you know, that students follow throughout, you know, through an academic process to achieve a qualification. And none of those had been written, nothing was in place, right? So really, I thought, you know, one, I thought, should I stay here? But I'd already got the job, right? And so I thought, all right, okay, so clearly I've got a lot of work to do. And I thought, all right, these students have got to do 2 years worth of coursework in one academic year, right? In less than one academic year, from October to around about May or June, they got to do 2 years worth of coursework. Not only in my, not because I was a head of faculty, right? So not only in my faculty area, but also in music. The guy I'm going to talk about in a moment, my friend, he's the head of the music faculty, right? He got there in July, the previous academic year, right? Again, with him, he asked some of the students, do you know what course you're doing? The students said, no, we're just jamming. We're just here to jam. We're just jamming. So those students had no idea about any of the courses they were running, that they were actually enrolled on in terms of what they had to do, because nobody had told them, right? So effectively, he, that's my friend, the head of the music faculty, and myself, right, we had to do a lot of writing very quickly to put syllabuses in place so students could actually get a qualification, right, which we began to do. So we've done that. Now, the senior teacher, right, who's the head of curriculum, who's supposed to be overseeing all that, he was there from the start of the school. It's a brand new school. So he was there from the previous academic year. His job in any school, that somebody's designated the head of curriculum, that person's job is to oversee all curricula, all writing of curriculum programs, and make sure everything's in place. That's his job. And then obviously, and then my job is to report to him, just to make him know that I'm doing my job properly. So he didn't do his job properly. That man done nothing. He done absolutely nothing, right? And by the way, he's got a good gift of the gab, but basically, in terms of doing his job, he didn't do it. He spent all his time from the day I got there slagging off the head teacher, who was a white woman, who really wasn't very good at her job, but I'll come to her again in a minute. Either way, we had an Ofsted, right? The school got unsatisfactory, and a couple of weeks later, she got sacked, right? But what they should have really done, they should have sacked her, and they should have sacked the head of curriculum as well, right? So that's just a little bit of background, right? But none of that is necessarily racism. You know, that's just negligence and unprofessional practice. You know, that's all that adds up to, right? Anyway, right, so now the racism bit comes into it like this, right? Bearing in mind that at this school, you've got a high Jewish population in the students, right? Another head of faculty, this white man, who's, I think he's Jewish, but not necessarily that him being Jewish got anything to do with it. By all intents and purposes, he's white, right? I want to make that clear, right? He, in a lesson, decides to call a black student a nigger, right? So he called this black student, right? I'm not going to mention the black student's name, but he called this black student a nigger in one of his art lessons, right? So obviously, this black male student is not happy about it, right? So he comes out of the classroom and you know, he's just not happy, right? And what happened is that the head of curriculum, who I've nicknamed the car salesman, right? Because to me, he just seems like a secondhand car salesman. He's got that gift of the gab, just like a secondhand car salesman. Well, he comes up, right? And instead of basically, you know, investigating the issue, because apparently in this country, racist behavior is actually a crime in England. You know, that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be a crime in this country, right? So anyway, instead of investigating the incident and all the rest of it, right, what he decides to do instead is actually say words, you know, words to the, I'm paraphrasing him, but he basically said, you young people, you black youngsters, you call each other niggers, and the teachers doing is basically trying to use your vernacular, blah, 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 you know, trying to justify this white teacher's verbology, right? Now, turns out that the car salesman, the head of curriculum, and that head of art, turns out that they're mates. They're friends from before they both joined that school, right? And so anyway, the boy goes home, tells his mum. Can you hear me, Gus?
Yes, sir. Goes home and tells his mum.
Okay. Okay, the boy goes home, tells his mum, who obviously isn't happy about it, right? So she gets an appointment with the car salesman. That's the head of curriculum area, right? The head of curriculum, right? Gets a meeting with him, right? But she comes out, she's not happy about the way the school's dealt with it, right? So nothing else, to my knowledge, happened about that other than the boy not being happy. Really, it's clearly affected his education, right? The mum's not happy and all the rest of it. So, okay, so you've got that happening in the background, right? Now, right, I've decided to leave that school for no other reason really other than the fact that when a school gets a 3 in an Ofsted, right, what it means for that school is that Ofsted is going to be Ofsted, by the way, is a body in England that that regulates the quality of education in England. You know that's what Ofsted is. Okay, so when a school gets a 1 is outstanding, a 2 is good, a 3 is unsatisfactory. Right, so we got, you know, the school got a 3. Right. So what that means for school is that Ofsted is going to be breathing down your neck, and all of the recommendations that's in their report, right, they want the senior team within any school to implement those changes ASAP. So because the school got a 3, I thought to myself, you know what, I don't need it. I'm leaving. I don't want to be in a school that gets a 3 because really I've got a big workload already and I don't want it to be any higher. And generally speaking, what senior team does is look for a load of scapegoats, normally black teachers, to scapegoat, right? So I just thought, you know what, I don't need that. I don't even want to be a head of department. I just want to teach. I just want to teach in the classroom and go home and mark a few books and go home. That's where I am in my life, right about now. So I start looking for another job and I get a job. Teachers can get jobs quite easily, right? Thank God. So I've got another job. But I thought to myself, you know what? I'm still going to make sure that my students get a good grade just to make the point, right? So and by the way, you know, most of my students that bother to put pen to paper, because I taught BTEC Performing Arts. So I taught lighting design. And I sort of line managed hair and makeup and costume and I taught art as well, right? So all my students that I taught that were going through exams, all of them got good grades, and the kids that I children that I oversaw, their departments, most of them that passed, if they wanted to pass, most of them actually got decent grades, right? So as far as I'm concerned, I did my job, right? So this car salesman, that's the head of curriculum area, starts panicking. All right, because the head teacher's been sacked. So he thinks it's okay to come up and start having a go at me for paperwork that's just a day late. Paperwork, you know, in other words, it's making no difference about anything at all, right? Bearing in mind that this car salesman didn't do anything the previous academic year, right? His job was to oversee the writing of curricula, right? And he didn't do it. He didn't do it for 12 months. Right. So the fact that he's got the audacity to come up and talk to me, right, I couldn't believe it. Right. So we had a conversation at first. He came up and he said, you promised me in the morning that you would have X paperwork to me sorted out. And I said to him, yeah, I was a bit busy this morning, but I'm sorry about that. But I'll have it done, you know, probably, but if not by this evening, by this afternoon, definitely by tomorrow morning. And so he keeps going on and on and on. Right. So it got to the point, right, where I was very professional at first, and it got to the point where I had to say to him, listen very carefully, right? I told you it's going to be done. I have no idea why you keep asking the same question in many different ways. And I told him, you're actually now wasting your time and mine. And what you now need to do is turn around and leave my classroom. And you actually need to do it now. Right. And he wouldn't leave. He just kept on going on and on and on. So it turned into this great big heated argument. His mate, the head of art, was also in the room, and both of them tried to shut me down. Right? But what they don't realize is that they're talking to the wrong person. That's just never going to happen. Right. So basically, we had a big ding dong backwards and forwards. Right. And in the end, he just turned his tail around and walked out. Right. So that's what happened with me and him. A couple of other things happened with me and him as well. But that was just one of them. Right. And so you got that. Now, what they tried to do with another black male teacher, right? An Asian teacher left the electronics department, right? And they didn't replace him. The technician left the electronics department and they didn't replace him. They left one black teacher in there to teach. Listen to this now. They brought him into the office and they said, can you teach a number of classes from the teacher that left and your classes? Can you do that? Teach two classes at the same time, right? So this black male teacher, and by the way, I was line managing him, right? This black male teacher said, he made a mistake. He said, okay, I will do that. That's his mistake, by the way, right? So what was happening, unbeknownst to me, what was happening is that this black male teacher was starting off one lesson in one classroom, and then he was, there's like a dance space in the middle. Then he was sort of dodging the dancers, right, running into the other classroom and getting that lesson going, and then he was doing that backwards and forwards, right? Because he was asked to do that. And to be honest, I think he was trying to people please as well, which he should never do, right? But anyway, he was, you know, this black male teacher was doing that. Obviously, it's in a technology area. So in other words, right, you got health and safety issues, right? So what they said to him after a couple of weeks was, after a few weeks was, you know, there's health and safety issues going on there. You are at fault, right? So it's just obviously very stupid, right? So they tried to have him up on health and safety issues at first, right? And so when he told me, I said to him, first of all, why did you accept that? And he didn't really give me an answer. He was just trying to be nice at the end of the day, trying not to cause waves, trying to be malleable, trying to be a good member of staff, if you like. Do you know what I mean? But obviously, they're not going to appreciate that, right? And they didn't. They tried to have a go at him for health and safety, right? So anyway, I told him to write a letter to the governors, right? And he did that, and then they laid off him. But since that day, they've been basically badgering him about this, that, all manner of, basically they've been nitpicking and picking holes in all of his practice, literally coming into his classroom, calling him out, all kinds of stuff, arguing with him on the, just outside the classroom in front of students, to the point where the students actually said, sir, the way that other white teacher spoke to you, this is a student's, sir, the way that other white teacher spoke to you was terrible. This is the student saying it, right? So anyway, after one particular argument, right, that was a mutual argument between a white member of staff, right, who was overseeing certain courses that this black teacher was doing. What this white teacher did, so what the executive head did, because the head had been sacked, what the executive head teacher did was send the black male teacher home, but leave the white male teacher at school, right? So this black male teacher emailed the executive head teacher and just asked a basic question, why have you sent me home? Right. After about two or three days, the executive head teacher said, well, we did it for your own good. We saw that you was under stress, blah, 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 blah. So we thought we'd do that, right? Which was nonsense, because what they should have done was gone and asked him, do you want to take some time out? Right. You know, that's pastoral care. Right. They didn't do that. They sent him home and then they left the white male teacher at school. Right. So when he came back in after 7 days, right, the car salesman, you know, that's the apparent head of curriculum who doesn't know how to do his job. He went to this black male teacher and said, you know what, he said to him, right, you wait in the visitors area and here's a visitor's badge. Put on the visitor's badge before you come in and have a meeting with me before you come back to work. Right. So think about it. Right. The executive head teacher said, we sent you home for your own good. And when he came back to school, the car salesman, you know, that's the apparent head of curriculum, is asking him to put a visitor's badge on. Right. And so right there, that's victimization. Right. So anyway, so that's just what's been happening with one male member of staff. Now, with the head of music, I won't go into detail, but the bottom line is it's all of the same type of stuff and worse, right? Basically, victimization, bullying, victimization tactics coming from some of the senior staff that are there that are mostly white, except for one black male senior staff who basically has been ostracized by all of the white ones. Right. So, but what they see, but where we are now, I'm going to go a bit quicker now. Where we are now is they clearly have underestimated the three of us, because what we've done, we've basically written letters to we're going to take it to tribunal. In England, you've got something called tribunal. So if you don't get as an employee, if you don't have any joy at work, trying to work out work-based disputes with your employer, then you can notify ACAS, which you have to do in this country by law. ACAS is like a mediation government-sponsored organization. The idea there is to sort it out before it goes to tribunal. That's the point of ACAS. By law, you have to notify ACAS and then you can take it straight to tribunal. So we're going to take this straight to tribunal because obviously it's clear victimization, it's clear bullying, and all of those, and it's racism basically. So the head of music, what he's gone and done, he's spoken to the student's mother, who was called a nigger, spoken to the student, got statements from the mother and the student, and that's going to be part of our tribunal case as well. And the mother and the son have been quite happy to provide us with detailed statements, right? So we've had loads of correspondence backwards and forwards with the senior team. I mean, the bottom line is I've been through this kind of thing before, right? The head of music's been through this kind of thing a number of times as well. Yeah. And the other teacher's never been through it, which is why he doesn't quite know how to deal with it. But I just want to end it here, right? That when you're black, when you're a black member of any of a staff team working for any white company, right, you have to be ready to fight your corner, right? And you can't be scared. You have to be ready to take it to the fullest conclusion, and then you have to communicate that to them, right, when you're ready. Not at the very beginning, because obviously you want evidence, right? But you have to know what your rights are and take it right down the line, you know. Victimization and bullying is against the law, right? Racism is against the law, right? Regardless of whether or not they're racist or not, or even whether or not the people, you know, the white people that write the tribunal law are racist or not, in writing, it's illegal, right? And so so where we are now is that we're going to take it to tribunal. And we've notified all of the governors in the school. We've had correspondence backwards and forwards. They've said that they've hired an independent person to adjudicate. He's not independent because they've hired this person, right? So we're quite happy with where we're going to take it, and we're going to take it as far as we can take it, you know. I'm not worried, not only because I don't go to the school, but I'm not worried at all. You know, them kind of things don't faze me. And I know that my colleague who's still working there, he's, you know, both of them are not worried either in terms of what the plan of action is going to be, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, but I won't go into detail with the rest of it. But, you know, that's just an overview, sorry, I didn't mean to talk so long, but that's just a long overview of more that's there, you know.
Wow. Fascinating. That context of white supremacy, the global problem of white terrorism, racism, some of the important lessons that I pulled from that, and I'll see if Mr. Fox, if he has anything, any observations you want to share, and then I'll nab some of the callers. They might have questions based on what you shared, but some of the things that stood out for me, just I would say overall, this sounds so similar. I suspect people can vouch for things that we've talked about, things that I've heard that happen here in the States and other parts of the world, just the similarity with regards to the way that white people function, the way that they practice racism, the way that they defend one another. I mean, it's global. That's why I think it's so important for non-white people to talk to one another around the world, just to see the similarities, so we'll know the scope of the problem that we're dealing with. Specific lessons, Voltron effect worldwide. When this white supervisor comes in to fuss at you, what are you doing with your paperwork? You said you were going to get it in, blah, blah, blah. And you know, you've already told them, I'll get it to you. You know, you need to leave my classroom. Then another white person intervenes. Hey, what are you doing talking to him like that? They're going to standard operating procedure. White people, they don't need to have any sort of quick meeting or what have you to go over. They already know. He's a white person. She is a white person. I'm supposed to be supporting her, particularly if it looks like it's any sort of disagreement or conflict with another dark person. Absolutely. I'm with this white person. I'm backing them all the way. We're going to put this nigga back in his place or her place.
But you know, one thing I really need to add, right? Thankfully, my friend who's the head of music down there, I've known him for a long time, because I've literally known him probably for about 25 years. It's that, you know, he's we're both musicians. He just said there's a job going on down there. You know, you might want to apply. But the important thing here is that we both understand racism, white supremacy, you know, and not only do we understand it, we are quite, we are of the opinion that we have to be on the same page when we deal with it. Right. And you've got to be able to take it as far as you need to go. Basically, you've got to be ruthless with how far you're prepared to take it in terms of dealing with it, even if we lose the tribunal, that's not the point. The point is to drag these white people right over the coals about it. Right. So that when you get other black teachers and black students coming in, right, that they think twice, you know, that you need to leave them thinking, right, if we do this, are they going to treat us the way that them other black people did us? Do you get what I mean? You have to leave them with that, you know. And so when they see another black person, are they going to, let's think about this one. And that's what, you know, and yeah, anyway.
Absolutely. I think Mr. Fuller, when he describes that, he says it's driving up the cost of business. Practice of racism, in other words, making it less efficient, making white people have to work harder, challenging them so that they get more resistance going about practicing racism. I absolutely think that's the, all of our job, what we should be doing. The second thing that stood out, where whites can be incompetent. That's one of the big things that people say, that white people are selfish, that white people don't help other people. That is not accurate. White people just don't help non-white people. They look out for other white people all the time. You see that worldwide, where you have all kinds of incompetent, lazy white people who have jobs that they are totally not qualified to have, but just on the basis of them being white in a system of white supremacy, hey, they get the job. Even black people that are super qualified. Nope, not going to hire you. We're going to take this white person here who can't even read correctly. We had that this week, Gwen Rags, that she had this white, her supervisor, white woman, couldn't even read correctly. Her grammar is terrible. No degrees, no nothing, but she's in charge. She is white. Black people, the same excuse when white people terrorize us and call us niggers or any other names, nignogs, whatever else that they come up with. The excuse, well, you all say that, so don't they say that here in the States? I've heard that repeatedly when white people get caught practicing racism, that they can work the black people, they can work black people to death, and I'm sure this applies to non-white people across the board. With this black male, they'll come in and say, hey, can you teach your class and teach Susie's class and John's class, and we're probably not even going to increase your compensation. And then when you're running around half crazy trying to do 3, 4, 5 different people's jobs and you make an error like they know is going to happen. Oh, got a policy violation here. Going to have to cite you for that. Sorry about that. Standard operating. We see this all the time. People have said this in the States consistently, where you end up having a black person. They end up doing 2, 3, 4, 5 people jobs and not being compensated for it. No reflection in terms of wow, this person is really doing a stellar job. We need to promote you to nothing like that. And I've said before, you cannot appease whites. You can do all this and think, oh, they will see that I'm a hard worker and I'm willing to sacrifice to the team and try. No, that's not how this works. They will just run you to death, laugh, and they will still be looking for any reason to terminate you, take some sort of punitive action against you when you're trying to do everything that you can to help out and show them, hey, I'm a valuable employee. I'm worthy of correct treatment. The visitor badge, I thought that was important too, because they do those sort of little degrading. Really, these are acts of violence, I think, as the caller was saying yesterday, acts of racism, acts of violence to degrade black people. You're not even really a team person here. We'll give you a little visitor badge to put on as opposed to you being an actual staff member and someone that we value. Just again, something we talk about all the time, the importance of documentation. Even if, and I think you even said, even if you're not going to respond right now to go challenge the white people on the job or what have you, just having documentation so you can be clear about what happens, and it gives you time. If you might decide a week later, a month later, 5 months later, okay, I'm ready to pursue this, and you'll have your documentation for exactly what has happened and in detail. You don't want to leave that stuff to memory. You really want to have it documented word for word, dates, times, as much detail as possible. Just if nothing else, just for your personal records. And then you can make decisions about, you know, how you want to deal with it. I will check, because we have people that had hands up as well. They might have some questions about what you shared with us, Andrew. Mr. Fox, did you have anything stood out that you wanted to share before I get to some of the folks that dialed in as well?
Well, that was just phenomenal, especially just the white teamwork within the workplace is just something else. It is just global, because I don't think there's a black person you could speak to who hasn't experienced it or observed it within the workplace. And especially when Andrew was having the discussion with both the teachers within the same room, it was just the wingmanship. They knew what they had to do to protect each other. It's just absolutely amazing. And the visitor's badge thing, that is just, it's like having your rights been revoked, because you're an employee, but you've been sent home. But then if you come back in, you've got to have a visitor's badge. So it's basically taking your rights away and basically saying, well, we'll give you it back only when the little nignog acts right.
It's just absolutely, it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing how they absolutely just the dedication. It's amazing. It's a dedication because your grandparents could say the exact same thing. My mum could say the exact same thing. They all have the same problems within the workplace or have experienced the same problems within the workplace. And when the student was called a nigger, how was it actually said?
This is it, because that's the first thing that I asked my colleague, you know, was he, you know, because I was thinking, was the teacher talking about some blaxploitation film, and, you know, was he talking about sort of, you know, was it in that kind of context, was it, a joke, if you can use it as a joke, right, because I don't think you really can. I'm not sure of the detail, but either way, I think the key thing is that the student, right, wasn't happy with it, right? And for me, if a student comes out not happy with how I use a term, right, that relates in some way, shape, or form to that student, right, then there's a problem, right?
What is the age group of the student? Was it 16 or higher?
It's year 10 to year 13. So the age range is, what is it? It's 14 to 18.
Yeah, so he knew, even at that age, he knew something was wrong there.
Yeah, well, he's year 11, so he's 16 years old, that particular pupil, you know, and he's old enough to work out whether or not something can be considered a joke. And at the end of the day, if the student doesn't consider it a joke, it's not a joke. What that senior teacher, the car salesman, apparent head of curriculum should have done is not try and he shouldn't have tried to come up and cover up for his friend.
Is he a Jack the Lad kind of, the Cockney geezer kind of guy?
Well, no, the car salesman, right, the head of curriculum area, he's not a Jack the Lad, but, right, you know, the reason why I call him a car salesman is because, you know, when you go and buy a used secondhand car and then the car salesman dresses it up to be in good working order and it's not. So basically this guy, he talks a good talk, but he didn't do any work last year. You know, the guy, when I got there, you got to understand, right? You send your son to my school, right? In the first year of a brand new school opening. If your son came home at the end of the year, right? Telling you, and you asked, where's all the work that you had done in that first year? Just imagine if your son said, well, you know, we didn't really do any really, right? And just imagine if you probed him a bit and you said, right, show me your art portfolio. And he didn't have one. Mm. What would that's what I'm talking about. Show me your, you know, show me the coursework that you've done on your BTEC, on your BTEC lighting course. Show me that work. He hasn't got one. And that's directly down to the lack of work, right, done by the head of curriculum area. But he talks a good talk.
Yeah.
So for me, I lost respect for the guy. Because at the end of the day, right, for you to be my line manager, you got to lead the way, mate. And if you're not going to do that, right, by what you do, not by what comes out of your mouth, but by what you do, right, I can't look you in the eye. You know what I mean? Because I've got, there's nothing, you're going to look at my face and know that I don't respect you, right? And I mean, there's a lot more to it. You know, there's a lot more, but yeah. But I really need to say though that whoever's listening to this, right, black people, right, non-white people, but black people really need to stick together in a workplace, right? Mm-hmm. Regardless of where the chips fall, right, you have to stick together and you have to know the law. So you have to know what your employment law is, know what. In this country anyway, in England, know what tribunal law is, know it off by heart, right? And know the steps and don't be afraid to go and do it. You know what I mean? Because it's better to tie these people up in tribunal law and use racism as well, right, than to not do it and have your life made a misery.
Wow, I'm looking because I've written it down, this the visitor's badge, that is something brand new to me, but that is a very hostile move.
coordinated, deliberate act of racism. And as I said, white people do that sort of thing all the time. I'm even reminded one of our listeners, investor here in the States, where he said, and he had got like a degree and all this other stuff for his job, and then found out that the other white people, his co-workers who are on the same level, they didn't have any sort of degree to get the job. They didn't even have the same amount of education as him. And then on top of it, they would go and tell him, here's the duster, go in and dust off our work area. They wouldn't go and ask any of the other white people to do this sort of thing, just him. Go dust the work area, or here's the mop, go mop the work area. These sort of little degrading acts that white people do all the time to undermine black self-respect and just have us feeling as though we are not worthy, just recognizing the pattern with that. The person that dialed in, I think you're on the vote line, if you had questions about what you've heard, phenomenal just incident all the way around to share. I'm so glad that we got Andrew on to share that, and perhaps if you can, you know, ride out with us over the next few weeks as all this evolves, you can give us an update on how this is progressing. With the caller that dialed in on the vote line, you should be with us, and Chantel, you should be with us as well. Caller on the vote line. Oh, and my apologies for the folks who dialed in on the phone line, who might have not heard us for a little bit. I think I had pressed the mute button accidentally, but that was corrected a long time ago. But at the very, very beginning, if you missed out on anything, it should all be archived, and that was just my fault with the button. But everybody should be good now. The caller on the vote line, did you have a question or a comment that you wanted to get in based on what you heard, or your own question that you wanted to ask? You should be with us.
Yes, I have a general question about for the British gentleman. Has there ever been, in light of, I could imagine, the racism, the anti-black racism in the schools, because we're having a similar issue in Toronto, and I always, whenever I talk to people from London, they tend to be, their stories about anti-blackness tend to be very similar to those in Toronto. And I was wondering, has there ever been any sort of Afrocentric initiatives in terms of education in London or any other areas of England? That's my question.
Mr. Fox, did you want to go first? Or?
Oh, sorry, Andrew. No, that's all for you. Sorry.
Do you mean whether or not there's any Pan-Africanist organizations that fight racial discrimination within the workplace? Is that the question?
Oh, no, sorry. What I want to know about, in terms of school, like the school system, there were some points you brought up.
I can see Woodwind can drop the price. If they can drop...
Oh, sorry about that. I think someone was talking. Go one more time, sir. Give you a question or clarification.
Okay, yeah. Has there ever been, in terms of schooling, like an attempt to push for an Afrocentric educational initiative in the UK?
All right, okay. If you're asking if any black or African people have... any people of African descent, black people of African descent, have had the idea to open a school run by and for black people, if that's what you're asking, then yeah. There's been, you know, there's been loads of, in London, I know of loads of attempts to do so. There's a few things around that. One, when Caribbean people came to England from the Caribbean, we opened up, when I say we, because my heritage is Jamaican, you know, we opened up a lot of
I could tell by the way you spoke. I had a feeling.
we opened up a lot of Saturday schools, right? So we opened up a lot of Saturday schools. Many of them still exist. So you got a famous one called the Queen Mother Moore Saturday School. They're having, as I understand it, they're having a Kwanzaa event in a couple of weeks' time, or just under a couple of weeks. So you've got lots and lots of Pan-African Saturday schools, or Afri-Central, whatever phrase one is happy to use. You've got a lot of Saturday schools run by African black people in London and probably around the country as well. Now, if you're asking the question, is there any junior in London? You have junior, you have nursery, junior, and then you have secondary, right? So if you're gonna, which is, I think secondary is akin to your high school out in America, right?
Yeah.
So if you're or asking, oh yeah, okay. So if you're asking if there's any of those schools,
yeah, like your nursery for us is like kindergarten, and your junior for us would be elementary school.
That's right. So if you're asking if there's any of these,
junior.
All right. If you're asking if there's any of these types of schools, I don't know of any. I don't know of any really. I mean, but the funny thing about that is in the late 80s, I've got an article, right, about a school called John Loughborough School. Now, that article is, I think it's from about 89, right? Now, the reason why that article is important, and the funny thing is, I cut it out in at that time, around about 89, right? Because it was a school run by the Black Seventh-day Adventist Church in North London, right? But what was important about that school is that it was, the school itself was run by Black Seventh-day Adventist a head teacher, and it was funded, this is the important bit, it was funded, as I understand it, by the Black Seventh-day Adventist Church, right? So, but here's the key thing though. In that area, at that time, exam results were 66% five A star to C grades, right? When all of the other schools in that area were about 33%. So what you've got then is a school run by black people, right, that had mainly black students in it, not only black students, not only black teachers, but mainly black students, right, that was achieving double, right, what they were getting in and around the area. You understand that one, right? So
so
that was one thing. Now fast forward to today, right, or rather about 3 or 4 years ago, that school was in special measures. It was, they had allowed it, the Seventh-day Adventist Church had allowed state funding, right, effectively coming under state control, and that school was in special measures, and they got rid of the black head teacher, a woman called June, Dr. June Alexis. They got, it was a big thing in London, they got rid of her, right, and the school's totally messed up. So the moral of that story is, if you got a school, don't allow state input if you want black children to get high exam grades. I mean, that's what I learned from it, you know. But there are no, as far as I know, there's a lot of talk of opening up a black junior secondary school, but so far, as far as I know, right, you've only got private ones that you've got a couple of privately run junior or nursery type things going on, but nothing on a big scale. And that's the fight that a lot of that's the thing, that's the big hurdle that we have to tackle. How do we fund a school, right, so that our children can get the education that we want them to have? How can we fund it? And that's the that is always the stumbling block in all of the meetings around schools in London, right? That's the issue. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, if I completely understand. I guess I kind of have a second question piggybacking on that, because we got that kind of school in Toronto, one school in particular, and some sort of programs we have in some of the high schools. It was sort of like a guinea pig experiment, and you know the white people were all upset, screaming, you know, this is segregation, because it was very interesting that something that benefits black students, and because it's, and the school never advertised itself that way, but as soon as it said black focus, you know, everyone started saying, oh, this is segregation. But what I found particularly more troubling, because you know, white people are going to be white people, anything that doesn't benefit them, you know how they're going to act. But what always troubled me was the black response to it. Even now, many blacks were actually working against the initiative. The school ended up happening at the junior level, but you had a lot of black people actually against it. And what disturbed me, it wasn't a critique of any curriculum plans, like any specifics, like saying, you know what, I want a program that focuses more on the ancient period, or I want a program that focuses like that. It was more the idea that they may not, that the black children may not be with white children. Like, they won't be holding hands with, you know, Billy and whatever to tell it. It was just amazing that we actually think that we need white people to do something successful. So I was wondering, do you see that similar mentality in London where, no, black children need to be with white children? We need the word I hate, but it's very popular in Canada, and I assume it's similar in London with the multiculturalism crap that goes, multiculturalism, diversity. So do you find that kind of sentiment from the black people in England in a large number?
I think it's a mixed bag, really. If I'm really honest, right, I don't think the majority of black, it'd be interesting to know what Mr. Fox thinks, but I don't think the majority of black people that I come across think enough about it. The average black person that I speak to thinks, they know there's an issue with racism. Racism is out there. We know that our children are not doing brilliantly in school. Black boys is, you know, there's a vague notion that there's an issue with black boys. There's also some sort of notion that white teachers can be racist, but we need to be, but we need to sort this out together. Some white people apparently are not racist. You get some good white people, you get some good white cops and all of that sort of stuff, right? But the funny thing is, the percentage of black parents, right, that I know pay for extra tuition in maths and English for their children, right, is massive. You know, loads and loads and loads. It's difficult to come across black parents, right, who, unless you grew up where I grew up. I grew up on a council estate, which is like, Gus, that's like a project in America, right? Where I grew up, right, you probably won't find parents that can afford extra tuition. But generally speaking, a lot of black parents know that there's an issue with the education system, which is why they pay for extra tuition. Right. So you've got that. So you've got black parents countering the nonsense that doesn't happen or does happen in school with paying for private tuition for their kids. And it's not, private tuition is not necessarily very expensive, which is why a lot of black parents actually do it. And so that's what I see. But you see, a lot of black parents are just not, just don't understand racism. A lot of black parents have no concept that racism is white supremacy. They just don't know it, right? They don't know it. And the other problem that exists is that a lot of black people, for them, it's not a problem unless it's a direct problem in their lives for them at that time, right? And that's the other problem. So, to be honest, even though this black mother, even if her son hadn't been called a nigger by this white racist, right, then it would be interesting to know whether or not, what she does in her own life to basically get rid of racism, white supremacy. Is she doing anything? And that's the problem. Black people need to see it as a consistent problem that they need to be involved in getting rid of, regardless whether or not it affects their child, and regardless whether or not they've got any children.
Mr. Fox, did you want to respond to that question about your perception of black people that have black parents, black people that are involved with the school system, their thoughts on wanting to be have black children with white children and have everybody together, multiculturalism, diversity?
Black people in this country have signed on the dotted line for multiculturalism. So the idea or proposal of having a black school for black children at the secondary level, I think a lot of black parents wouldn't go with that. At the nursery level, yeah, they would go with that at the nursery level, but as soon as they get to secondary level now, they'd be wanting to take their children to other either mixed or Catholic or Christian schools. I don't see black people in this country think racism is the number one problem in this country.
because we have a lot of the, you know, the mixing of the races in this country, which have been going on for the past probably 50 years. So I don't think black people see, you know, racism, white supremacy as a number one problem. And I can't see them going for it at all. Regarding the gentleman who asked the question, regarding the school in, is it, I think he said Toronto, where they wanted to have a black school. I think I saw something like that on a documentary. And did they go to like a tribunal? We would call it tribunal over here, but it was like a court session where you had one of the black parents who didn't want to have this school, and she was crying, saying that she wanted all the children to walk hand in hand, the black children and the white children, to go to school together, and she was dead against the idea of having this black school. Is that the same one?
That is probably it. I'm almost sure, but because I think it is, but I'm not 100%. But that might be the example that I actually think of. I think it is that was happening. And if it's Toronto, then it's definitely that, because that's the only area. It's really Toronto. It's just the one school that they had. So it's probably that incident where, you know, she was crying. But there was also other discussions that I had watched, where you would have, you know, one, there was a debate. I could actually show, I just wish I could remember the link, but there was actually a debate when the school was being proposed, or it had just opened and the enrollment was low. And there was a debate between one of the advocates, and then there was a school board leader, and on his side, you know, the typical black person who sides with the white people was on their side, a lawyer, complaining that, you know, we need the children to be together, that it's just an excuse for the school board to not implement an Afrocentric curriculum in the broader school system. And that's what he was more arguing for. But on the other end, the person who's advocating for a school is saying, look, this research, sociologists and stuff have done this research in Canada for 30 to 40 years, and nothing has been done. So obviously we need to start doing this type of initiative. And in fact, it can actually be more inspiring. But, you know, they were stuck on that. But I do think that did happen with a woman where she was crying. They had a call-in session. They had council discussions. I'm not sure the exact specifics of how the process exactly went, but we did end up having, the school did materialize, and it's been running for a few years. And as expected, it's been successful. Even white kids are trying to get into the school, which I think is very scary.
Sorry, so you're saying it is successful, and now the white children want to go to this school?
Yeah, there's actually white children. I was told that white children are trying to get in because apparently in the relevant marking areas, they're doing 7% higher. Right, and then they're trying to, there's been recently a few weeks ago, a smear campaign trying to smear the school and undermine the school, because I think it was a project that was supposed to last, I can't remember how many years, and now they're trying to smear it or trying to cut it. And they don't get a lot of resources, as you could imagine. And this goes back to your argument about support from the state, which is, again, why white people were mad about it. It was just interesting to me how black people thought about the school and how white people thought about it. That's why whenever I hear Gus often talk about how non-white people are confused about racism versus white people, and white people know exactly what they're doing, I feel, being Canada, I would take his argument further. I would say that among all non-white people, black people, specifically in Toronto, because I don't know the rest of Canada, but I know Toronto for sure, black people are the most confused of all the non-white people. I think other non-white groups, whether you're looking at South Asian, whether you're looking at Asian, they can understand, you know, the need to work more collectively much easier, even when you see how they interact on a basic level. Talking to a black person, that white people are your problem, they go completely bonkers here. So, and this is a lot of what I saw and how the school has been received. So you would have black parents saying, you know, I don't want to really send my children to the school because then they won't get accepted to university, they'll have all these problems, which is a bunch of crap, because this is a junior school we're talking about. So I don't know how that's going to affect university, but it's actually elementary for us, junior for you guys. That's what they're actually talking about. And now they actually expanded some aspects of the curriculum into the post-secondary. So obviously there's been some success. So.
Who funds the school?
Yeah.
That is crazy. My apologies.
Hello?
Yes, I just got disconnected. I was going to play a sound clip, and then I stopped it. When I did, it just...
bad black people.
I jammed up everything when I stopped. I guess we're talking about something that we shouldn't have, but I'm nabbing everybody back on the line as I can. I will... I'm grabbing Mr. Fox.
Hello?
Now. Okay, we got Mr. Fox back.
Sorry.
And hopefully we should have Andrew back in a second. As I was telling the listeners, I got dropped and I think I lost. Yes, sir, Andrew, we got you back. Okay, so we have everybody back. I was telling folks, I went to play my sound clip where it said, if anyone is ignorant about racism, it's black people. And as soon as I went to do so, it jammed everything. The switchboard dropped and I lost all the callers. Could be racist interference, but I will chalk that up to that being a very important point, because all the time when we talk about racism, white supremacy, I think one of our callers in Michigan, she asks every guest, doesn't matter, white or black, who's more confused about racism? Everybody always says white people. And I have said consistently that should just tell you the magnitude of the problem if everyone is wrong on this concept. And I'm saying that that is the case. You should never think that the problem is that white people are ignorant about racism. That's not what it is. If anybody is confused, ignorant, doesn't understand what racism is, how it works, it is us, black people. And even the degree that we do, we don't understand enough about this problem because we have not solved it. If there are any folks who have questions, they want to make sure they get in before we wrap things up, you should get your hand up quickly because this is not our 3-hour broadcast. It's just we're doing about another 11 minutes and then we will be all done. Did someone have a question they wanted to make sure they got in or comment, statement? Oh, okay. For everybody, I wanted to make sure I got in as well, just with the time of the year, since everybody I think that we have on the line right now is outside the States, and it sounds like everybody here, at least, a little bit less confused about racism. How are you all navigating the quote-unquote holiday season? I know many folks who, once you start to get a better understanding of racism and you start to pull back from participating in all of this stuff, that can be a problem. How has that been for the folks that are on the line with us today?
Well, with me, I've not celebrated. Can you hear me well?
Yes, sir, Mr. Fox. Yeah. Proceed.
I've not celebrated Christmas since I was 16 years of age. That's when I started reading Chancellor Williams' book regarding destruction of the black civilization. And you put two and two together and realize Christianity and what kind of tool it's been. And then you look at Christmas and you see people running up and down trying to buy presents just for this one day. And then the meanings behind it is just like, well, why am I doing this? So for the past, since I was 16, and now I'm 34 now, so for that period of time, I've not celebrated Christmas at all. It's just a day off for me.
Anybody else? How you been dealing? In particular, if you've had any problems, people are fussing at you for taking a stance like Mr. Fox, saying you're messing up the season for us.
I mean, for myself, I'm a Christian. I believe Jesus Christ is my personal Lord and Savior. I need to add that in. I'm saying that to say this. I don't do Christmas. I don't do Christmas because it's a pagan ceremony. It's not in the Bible. That's the main reason why I don't really do it. I've said to people, if they want to buy me a present, I'm not going to take it. So they can if they want. That's fine. I sit around the table with my family and I do all of that kind of stuff, because for me it's important that family, whenever you can, because some members of my family you hardly ever see them. So, we Skype. I got family in America. We Skype on that day, and it's a lot of fun, But the bottom line is there's nothing in the Bible about that. It's a European pagan ceremony. That's what it is.
So that's, you know, that's the bomb. That's really what Christmas is. If people want to do it around me, it's their, you know, I'm not going to have a go at them for doing it, nothing like that. But if they ask me why I don't do it, then basically, you know, that's what I'm going to, and then we can have a conversation about paganism if they really want to. But most will do that for about a minute and then they'll just stop, you know, so, Do you get what I mean? So that's what that is. Do you know what I mean? So yeah.
Very familiar.
It's funny because my
caller in Toronto, were you?
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. It's just something went on. Yeah. It's interesting because my mother and father always have these conversations about Christmas, and they're very contrasted. Like, he looks at, like, we sort of just passively engage in it because it's just one of those, you know, it's a day off for me, you know, I'm off school for exponential amount of time. That's really what it is for me. You know, you see relatives, family gets together, and we don't like, well, I don't, obviously, I'm obviously different, but me and my father, we don't mind looking at the political, the white supremacist aspects of it, but, you know, just like German was saying, the conversation lasts for about a minute when you want to get them to think critically, because the first thing you get is, oh, it's just a time to spend time with family. We don't do none of that political stuff. And I'm wondering, so you need Christmas to spend time with family? So I just look at it, look, just take the gifts, enjoy the food. And that's just how I look at it. I just sort of, whatever. That's it.
Thankfully, I can say for this year, I have not been around non-white people that are really vested in this day and, you know, get upset when you are not and you're not investing your time and energy in all this. I've really appreciated that. I know for me in the past, it was a lot more unpleasant having to deal with that. And then it's almost like they put you on the defensive, like you have done something wrong if you're not engaging. And I don't proselytize. I don't go around and try to convince people that they should or shouldn't be doing the quote unquote holidays and that sort of thing and shaking my finger in their face for doing it. Just non-participation is a problem, which shows me how important this is to the system of white supremacy that you be vested in this. In fact, I remember we read 12 Years a Slave for our book study club back, I think that was 2013. And they talked about on the formal plantation how Christmas was so important, and the racists, they would give the enslaved black people, they would give them, I think, 6 or 7 days off, and they would make a big party out of it and eat, and everybody would be looking forward to it for months ahead of time. And, oh, this is so great, so great. And I said, wow, that, even hundreds of years ago, the significance of this day on how we think and just the way that we use our time and energy has been very important to the maintenance of white supremacy for a long time. So hope folks are managing as best they can. And if you have to go to any sort of office or work related, what they call Christmas parties, be codified. If you got to go, no alcohol. We've said that before and people have shared about that, but definitely be codified. Be on guard. You are not there to celebrate and have a good time. You're there to minimize the likelihood of being mistreated. You do your time, limited amount of time that you have to be there, and then you abscond. Other comments? We have about 5 left. Other things folks want to make sure they get in before we wrap up?
Can I just say something very quickly?
Absolutely.
See, racism, white supremacy is a culture. It's the culture that white people everywhere are born and brought up in, right? And it's very, you know, if you tell a Jamaican, right, not to eat rice and peas and curry chicken and all of that and run down and salt fish and all that, you try telling that to a Jamaican, right, and they will look at you as if you must be crazy, right? It's not going to happen, right? It's not going to happen. So just like that with white people, they will not, cannot stop practicing racism, white supremacy. It's part and parcel. It's the lifeblood of all white culture. It is white culture. In their lives exist and is immersed in white supremacy, racism. That's just what it is. And unless we, if we don't understand, see, but here's the other side of it, right? Sorry, but conversely, sorry to say, most black cultures are involved or invested in, because you're talking about a symbiotic relationship, you're talking about two things that exist side by side. Most black cultures have evolved, if you like, to exist alongside and placate and allow racism, white supremacy. You understand what I'm saying? So our cultures, you see, so it's, to get rid of racism, white supremacy, I think that we our culture has to change. What we cannot allow, make space, make room within our culture, within our cultural practice, thinking for white people to say and do the things that they say and do. We have to literally change what we do and what we do on a daily basis. That's all I want to say.
Well said. Mr. Fox, caller in Canada, or any of the folks that are listening in, you have about 4 minutes. Anything you want to make sure you get in before we wrap up?
Yeah, right.
I agree about the part about Jamaicans. It's extremely true. We're very stubborn to look at the ways in which one of the things I was colonized, the way that we look at anything white as favorable, even my own relatives, they get very defensive when I say, well, we got to look at, well, you know, you can't stop blaming white people. You know, you have to be open-minded and all this crap. I think one of the things we have to stop resisting the idea about our African origins too as well. That's that, I think, when we can figure out, I don't know how to do it, but to get Jamaicans to start looking at their African background more seriously and with more passion, I think that might help. How to do it, I don't know.
Mr. Fox, you were going to comment as well?
Yeah, because we just don't like to speak about racism and white supremacy and the fact that this could be a system and white people are never going to change, because we're always expecting the next generation to be much better, but this problem is still here. Each generation just refines itself, and we just don't want to deal with it, because with the Jamaicans in Jamaica, when the slaves were free, they buried their chains. They didn't want to deal with it no more. The stories didn't get passed on. We don't like to do this. So I think a massive help to try and solve this problem is always getting the youth on board, because the caller in Toronto sounds young, like he might be in school. And I know from listening to one of the Saturday broadcasts, you got a caller from the Bay Area, and I think he's in high school. Is that correct, Gus?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely awesome that you got the youth, because the youth are very, very, very important. If we can just get the youth on board and just trying to understand this system and what it is, I think white supremacy will then have to turn the next page, because they've just been operating on probably two pages of the white supremacist manual. They just, each generation of white people just work on two pages, because how we're dealing with this is the confusion is, when you see the confusion, the levels of confusion, I'm confused, but I always knew something wasn't right. But it's the levels of confusion and the bad moves we keep on making, because the younger generation are not talking with the older generation. No one's passing on the tools. So the sooner we get the youth on board, I think the sooner we can get this problem solved.
Amen. Amen. I think one of the things we emphasize regularly on the broadcast is parents. And I mean, you can only teach, you cannot teach what you don't know. So inform yourself first and foremost about what racism is, how it works, what it means to be white. But definitely you have to talk to your children, and probably even talking to some other black children, non-white people. Talking to young folks is very, very important to make sure that they're clear. And if nothing else, if you can get that information sooner, you can perhaps save yourself from making some errors. Just if you have accurate information about what it means to be white, you can at least cut down on a few mistakes in terms of how you function, things you say, things you do, once you have a better understanding of the world that we live in. But hugely important all the way around. And I also think talking, as I've said consistently, talking to people that are in different parts of the world also hugely important, because I think a lot of us end up thinking that this problem is just localized to this specific region, and thinking that you can go someplace and you won't have to deal with racism. And that sadly is just not the case. Global system, I think Dr. Kamban says they've made the whole world one giant plantation, one giant prison. That is what we're dealing with. We have to figure out ways how to go about dismantling that system immediately. That said, we should be here tomorrow evening. The documentary film Wilmington on Fire, talking about information not being passed down one generation to the next. This documentary film is specifically about incident of white terrorism in Wilmington, North Carolina in the 19th century, kind of late 1800s after the Civil War, where white people organized. Again, they're not ignorant, where they got together, organized, saw black people that were trying to help themselves, do for themselves, behaving in a constructive manner, working together, and said, oh, no, we're not going to tolerate that. Went and just, well, racism is war, but they went and violently attacked and destroyed this area and took land. Another thing that I emphasize, this when these acts, I think when people, they talk about Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Rosewood down in Florida, I've said consistently, Elliot Jaspin, he's a white man, racist suspect. He was on the program in 2010, where he said that this happened, where white people come in and evict all of the black people from an area, and confiscate their property and kill a lot of them and tell them, you know, you got to be out by sundown or we're going to kill you, that this happened just in the United States. I'm sure, you know, worldwide, but just in the U.S. more than 200 times, well over 200 times that this happened. And you really only hear people talk about those one or two isolated incidents when this happened over and over and over and over. Wilmington, North Carolina is one of those incidents. It's a black filmmaker, Chris Everett. He'll be with us tomorrow evening. Really looking forward to getting some of the information about all this. And I think you'll hear that same concept of black people saying, black people who experienced this, their grandchildren and relatives who are still alive saying that this wasn't talked about. It was whispered. We didn't want to talk about it. It was frightening. It was a horrendous experience, so we just didn't talk. Same thing that was just said. We bury the chains and just move on as best we can. That's one of the practices that we really got to stop, because I think that that really hampers us from having an accurate understanding of how things got to be the way that they are, number one, and then everything else as it relates to racism, white supremacy. But that should be, again, tomorrow evening. Looking forward to that. And then we should also be here on Tuesday. Non-white, non-black female, so-called Asian, she did a post where she was talking about why she would not be sexually engaged with white people. And it directly relates to her experience and understanding of racism. I thought it would be cool to have her on the program, and particularly to get her thoughts. I have, you know, concluded that black people are treated worst in the system of racism, white supremacy, and even the point that was brought up earlier about some of the non-white, non-black people, that they might be a bit more informed about racism. They're still victims, but they might have a bit more information than black people who are treated the worst under the system of white supremacy. But that should be Tuesday. All of these programs are back to our normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have confusion or questions or whatever suggestions, feel free to drop an email at untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Huge thanks to everyone for participating. Our caller in Canada, Andrew, Mr. Fox, outstanding to speak with all of you this morning, and hopefully we can do it again for the new year 2016. As I said, Andrew, definitely keep us posted on how things are progressing going with the tribunal. We definitely want to get the details on how that goes down, and just hope all of you all can remain safe and constructive moving forward towards solving this problem. But again, thank you all for sharing a bit of your Sunday, I guess for you all, Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening with us. And
Sunday evening, yeah.
For sure. Yeah. We'll be looking forward to speaking with you all again really soon. Just really enjoyed it and appreciate your time and energy.
No problem. Did we miss a show out on November?
I make sure I get one. Andrew, you said...
No, just to say, no, it's been great. Thank you very much for having us on.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And Mr. Fox, you said...
The broadcast, the global broadcast, we missed one out in November, didn't we? Because we had one late October.
We were here for that. Was we were doing? We were talking about the Paris attack in November. I changed the title because I thought that you know was really the focus of the program, and just to make sure that more people listen, I just changed the name of it to the Paris attack in France. But that was our global Sunday talk, the one that we did for November.
Okay.
Yeah, just change the name, but we'll be consistent so people will know they can look for this program and find it in the archives. And anybody else, if you get confused, the one for November, it just is not called Global Sunday Talk on Racism. It's switched to Terrorist Attack in Paris, France. That's what it's called, so that I thought that would draw more attention, and, you know, that was the big news at the time. Caller in Toronto, good to hear from you as well, sir. Thank you for dialing in. Glad to, as I said, always great to talk to non-white people who are in different parts of the world. With that, if you have gripes, confusion, questions, feel free to drop an email. And again, that was my apologies for people if you tuned in right at the very, very beginning of the program after the sound clip. If you didn't hear anything for a few minutes, just brushed the mute button by accident, but got it all corrected. The archive should be pristine, and you'll be able to hear the whole program in its entirety. Mary, she was with us the last time. She even emailed in that she wanted to participate. She just had a previous engagement, but she should be back with us 2016 as well. So hopefully we can continue. And other folks, if you're listening in, definitely tune in. We do our early broadcast on Sundays. Thanks again. Invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com racism-notes.blogspot.com when you hit the blog, PayPal is on the top right corner. If you're not into PayPal, feel free to drop us an email and we will get you a physical mailing address. Huge thanks to all the folks who have invested down through the years. I hope the program has been and continues to be worthy of your time and energy. That's it. We'll be back in about 36 hours. Remain constructive for your weekend. I will emphasize again, particularly that this time of year, sobriety would be best under conditions of war. Man, race soldiers, they are out in full force. You do not want to be behind the wheel as a driver, as a passenger, even as a pedestrian. If you're under the influence, you do not want to make it easy for racists to make problems for us. We want to be lucid, clear thinking, so we can make the best possible decisions to protect ourselves and other black people that we might be responsible for. Just have that in mind at all times. Also, buckle up every time you're behind the wheel, every time you're in a vehicle, even if you're in a passenger. Just doing everything we can to minimize contact with whites, keep them out of our business so we're not having unnecessary problems. Certainly, you do not want to be around intoxicated whites ever. That is a recipe for disaster. It can go from zero to lethal in about 5 seconds. I would even encourage caution being around non-white people who are under the influence. We already got enough unnecessary problems. We don't need to add to our list of woes. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice as soon as possible. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.